Thank you, Brother Dan. Take your Bibles and turn with me to the book of Esther, chapter 2 this morning. The book of Esther. Well, actually, we'll begin reading in chapter 1 in just a moment. Title of the message this morning, and I want you to think about this thought as we begin to go into further the book of Esther that we started a couple of weeks ago. It's a very grammatically incorrect, but yet it states where we have been in our lives many times. They done me wrong. Now, how many of you have ever been there? Yeah. They done me wrong. Now, you understand that, and I don't think, even though it's in a southern language, so to speak, I don't think you have to be from the South to understand that. Right, Brother Bob Liss? My wife's from Pennsylvania. Got to pick on that. We got to keep some of these northerners here to keep us straight, is what she said. But you understand, they done me wrong, don't you? All of us, at one point in our life, have had someone do to us something we felt was wrong. Some that maybe are just out of kindergarten even still remember it. Others of you are a little, shall we say, more mature. And you have no control over it. And whatever you decide to do when they do you wrong is going to affect probably the rest of your life. And we're going to see in the book of Esther how Esther was done wrong from the very get-go. She had a rough start. And it's going to be what you're going to have to learn is that she did not react, she responded. Book of Esther chapter 1, where we left off last week, verse number 15, or a couple of weeks ago rather. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law, because she hath not performed the commandment of King Azarias by the chamberlains? And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong to the king only, but also to all the princes, to all the people that are in the provinces of the king Azarias. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes when it shall be reported. The king Azarias commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. Likewise shall the ladies of the Persian Media say this day unto all the king's princes which have heard the deed of the queen. Thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. If it please the king, let there be a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the law of the Persians and the Medes that it not be altered, that Vashti shall come no more before King Azarias, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree shall, which he shall make, shall be published through all his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both the great and small. And the saying pleased the king and the princes, and the king did according to the word of Memucan. Now, we pick up there, and as we saw last time together, the word God does not appear in the book of Esther. His presence, however, and we titled the message last time, Where is God?, is seen throughout the entire thing. We have a mad king, a queen who said no, and I'm not going to go before your drunken party. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. A king who's trying to take over the world, who is mentally unstable, psychopath. And we wonder, where in the world's God and all that? God had a plan for it, though, and we saw that as we begin to see the plan begin to unfold. Always throughout history, the devil has tried to stamp out the nation of Israel. During this time, this was happening once again. In fact, a young lady is going to step onto the pages of Scripture who is a Jew. God has his plan. In fact, the line of Jesus will come throughout as you'll see this taking place. And God is going to keep his promise. God in the beginning of time said, I will send a redeemer for fallen man. Satan is not all-knowing. We like to think he is. Sometimes he's not. All he knows is that God said, I'm going to redeem man. I'm going to do it through this race. So the devil tried to do his best to stamp out that race. This is where we find it, and here we find almost a comical situation. Memucan is kind of answers the king here, and we find a panic. First thing we see is a panic. There's a little bit of dismay going on. The queen said no. The king got mad, and he said, what in the world are we going to do? Memucan here reminds me of a gentleman I heard a story about. Man was out, and he had some friends over, and he was bragging to them. They got to talking about how their wives and their husbands got along, and he looked at him. He said, well, my wife, she was down on her knees in front of me last night. And they said, really? And he said, oh, yes, she was. And about that time, his wife opened the door and said, honey, tell them how the truth was. His face got a little red, and he said, well, she was down on her knees in front of the bed and said, come out from under that bed, you coward, and fight. Well, here's where I believe Memucan is. He looks at him and he says, king, we got a problem. He says, there's a dismay here, and we got to do a dismissal, because if we don't, everybody's wives are going to do this. Now, you need to understand something. The Equality Rights Association and all that stuff, it was way far away. As a matter of fact, there were very little of this, and I'll have to explain this and try to do it tactless. You understand, we are just telling you how it happened, not the way it ought to be. In these days, particularly in which this was written, a woman or a child in most homes was considered a piece of property. No more than this table or this furniture down here. They were bought and sold. Oftentimes, and you'll even remember some of the Bible stories where the prophet, the widow woman comes to the prophet and said, we have a problem. We can't pay our bills, and the debt collectors are coming to take my two sons as slaves if I can't pay my debt. And so they were considered kind of like your automobile or a car, a piece of furniture, something that could be bought and sold with no regard to emotion or feeling whatsoever. Now, we understand that's not what God set up. Back in the very beginning of the book of Genesis, he said, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife. He wasn't writing that to Adam. He didn't have but one choice. He was writing that to us so that we should know. And he says, and he shall love her, and they shall be one flesh. Now, nobody's going to take their own flesh and hit it with a hammer on purpose. You see, God had not set this up, but man had by traditions had corrupted God's establishment of the home. By the way, today we have things that do that. We have certain industries that are wrong and immoral, and they degrade women, and that's what they do. They're not God's ordaining. And so Memucan here, he says, we got a problem, king. And you know what I think he was afraid of? I think he was afraid he was going to go home and his wife was going to, you know, get on him a little bit. And so he said, look, if the queen does this, what are all the women in the kingdom going to start doing? He was afraid they're going to have a women's uprising, so to speak. Now, I know every good wife and every even bad wife here. I know there's no bad wives here, but right now your blood is starting to boil, isn't it? I can just tell, you know, I see the hair starting to rise a little bit, you know. Well, let me remind you once again, we're just telling you what it was. And Memucan, he tells the king, fire her. You know, I've seen a lot of politician ads and about one or the other on both sides of it, and they're all saying, fire so-and-so or whatever. Well, he's saying, look, fire the queen and let's get another one. But if you do that, then all the women of the kingdom will know and they'll give honor to their husbands. Now, I don't know, but I don't think it worked. You know, I don't believe that's not the way you get honor. You earn it, don't you? But they did that. He listened to this advice. They fired Vashti. She's no longer queen. She's removed. And then we have not only a panic, but we have a predicament. In every fairy tale story, you understand there's a king and there's a what? All right, stay with me. There's a king and there's a what? A queen. I mean, you can't even play chess without having the king and queen, right? And so they have a little problem going on here, and the storybook kingdom's no longer storybook because they're missing their queen. Now, it takes them a little while. In chapter 2, it looks like that the king is over being angry. In verse number 1, it says, after these things, when the wrath of King Azarias was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Now, mind you, this has been almost 4 years. We read these Bible stories that are true, and we feel like they happened in an instant. We do that to God, don't we? God, I've got a problem in my life, and I want you to solve it. I want you to solve it now! Don't we? That's how we want. But when we go back and we study these Bible passages, we realize that's not how it happens. I know you understand I'm such a patient person. Now my wife will start laughing right here. I don't even like to wait for a traffic light. You know, I'm sitting there counting. You know, it's in, we were in Florida recently and the traffic lights there, like, you know, seems like forever. You know, I pulled up to one and thought I was going to have to get a haircut before I left, you know. It's just, you sit there and you sit there and you sit there. But we want it and we want it now. We have microwavable meals, you know. We have instant this and instant that. I mean, everything's instant. We want it as soon as we touch the switch, you know. We want the internet to be just like that. We want it to snap along. And when it comes to our problems in our life, we say, God, now, I want you to be instant. Snap, snap, snap. But it's been 4 years. And all this that's been going on has taken at least 4 years. And we see the plan then. In verses 2 through 4, they decide to have the first Miss World contest. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Haggai, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now, once again, we have an American view, or maybe a fairy tale storybook view, of this happening. This was not Miss World contest with, or a Miss America with rules and all of this set forth to ensure that there's a fair contest. As a matter of fact, this is not a contest at all. In fact, it's closer to a kidnapping. There was no choice given here. This was not where women would line up and put their name on a board and say, yeah, I want to be the king's wife. You didn't want to marry this creep. I mean, this man was a man I told you last week, a couple of weeks ago, had gotten so upset when his ships were lost at sea, he pulled his belt off, went down to sea, and began to beat the ocean. Yeah, try burning supper for him, huh? I mean, this guy is a nut. He wants to take over the world. He's not the guy. He's the one mama told you about, you know. You don't want to marry this guy. And yet they actually go to make print. Can you imagine having that job? He appoints officers. I mean, he literally appoints officers and they go out across the land seeking to find all the beautiful young virgins of the land to bring them to be in part of the king's little beauty contest here. Now, this was not, as they said, a Cinderella and glass slipper affair. You didn't want the shoe to fit. I wonder how many arranged marriages there were real quickly, you know. You know, I've often laughed at people courting. One young man was asking another, I was reading a story about it. He asked this young lady, he said, look, would you marry me? And she said, she looked at him and said, no, but I'll always admire your good taste. Another one said, what would you say if I asked you to marry me? And she responded, absolutely nothing. It's impossible for me to laugh and cry at the same time. Well, another one looked back at him and said, I'll think about it, and if nothing better comes up, I'll get back to you. You know you're in bad shape then. They didn't have that choice. But I do wonder how many arranged marriages or how many fast marriages came up to avoid having to go live with the king. Because you see, let me explain this a little bit. Once they were taken into this captivity, that's literally what it was, because we have a panic, a predicament, a plan, and now a pageant, but it was a captivity. You didn't go back home. You were made part of the king's harem. And that was it. You were kept, whether you want or not, you were kept there for the rest of your life. You were the king's harem. Now, how many of you want to volunteer for that contest? All of a sudden, the playing field looks real bad, doesn't it? No choice was given. They were simply rounded up like cattle and brought in and then begun to be prepared to go meet the king. Now, this is where, remember we said, where is God? And remember our starting statement today, they done me wrong. This is where steps onto the pages of Hadassah, or as you know her, Esther. Hadassah was her Jewish name, and we'll find that she obeys her uncle in the fact that she avoids using that name in the palace. But here comes this beautiful young lady. Oh, she was probably not much older than some of you middle schoolers here. They usually averaged around between 14 and 16. 14 and 18 is when they chose their wives. So some of you young ones here. Because you see, it was going to be 4 years before she'd really meet the king. And so they bring in all of these beautiful young women, young girls, teenagers. Esther steps into a contest that she didn't want to be in. Wrong. I want you to think with me a little of what you know or maybe don't know about Esther. We find that Esther was raised by her uncle, Mordecai, a Jew. Not only is it important about his lineage, but I want you to read what's not written. Why was she raised by her uncle? Her mother and father, it says, were dead. Now, we don't know her exact age here, but we do know that she was just a young lady. And just imagine, I remember back some years ago, good friends of ours down in South Georgia, young lady was 12 years old, and her and her father were in a, or her and her mother, rather, were on the way to school one morning, and they looked one way, and all they saw was fog. It gets very foggy sometimes in South Georgia. And they pulled out onto the highway to go to school, and not seeing it, there was a semi-truck coming right down the road. Pulled in front of it. Almost instantly, the car was hit, flipped over or whatever, and just tore apart. The young lady actually wound up with just some wrist injuries and was able to come out of it with some pins in her arm. But her mother will never be the same again. Her mother still lives in a nursing home. Has the mind of about a 12-year-old now. It was a miracle that she even survived. They thought for sure she was going to die. She was in a coma. But now Brittany goes back and sees her mother all the time in a nursing home. No fault, just an accident. I mean, how do you blame fog? They done me wrong. Here was Esther, her parents are dead before she's even out of high school. It was wrong. We don't know the circumstances surrounding their death, but we do understand they were gone. Imagine, young people, imagine you that have parents maybe even that have gone on, but if you had a good life with them, what a blessing. If you've had your parents for all of your life and you know where they are, you need to thank them. You need to be grateful. You have something special. There are young people all around the world that don't have no idea. There are young people around the world whose parents still get rid of them. Think about the abortion crisis we're seeing. I remember seeing a sign not long ago on the interstate that said, "What if your mother had chose abortion?" You see, we have all of that going on. She was done wrong. She was hurt. This was not anything of her choosing. But we're going to see what her reaction is to this captivity. You know, in verses, let's look in verses 5 through 7. Now in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. Now you need to keep up with all of that very, very closely towards the middle of our study. It's very important who the family line is here, and I'll tell you why in a couple of weeks. And he brought up who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. And the maidens pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for her purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to give, be given to her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women of the house, women's house, to know how Esther did and what would be, should become of her. She had obeyed her uncle and only used her name Esther. She was put forth in this beauty contest in the captivity, and she displays a charm that must have been God-given, we'll see later, because she doesn't even require the makeup. She goes into this contest that she didn't want to be at. She was done wrong. Not only was she stolen out of her own land, her mother and father are dead. Now she's taken to this foreign land, and here in this foreign land, she's stolen from her home, kidnapped by the king's men. Absolutely nothing anybody could do about it. You think she's been done wrong? Yeah. Just imagine, parents, if someone came into your house and stole your 15-year-old and did that. Now, I don't know about you, dads, but at my house, that's time to get out the shotgun, ain't it? You know, that's just not going to happen, you know. I mean, then yet here she has no choice. She's been done wrong. Think about it, young ladies. Imagine being stolen at 15. And she could have gotten so bitter, so depressed, so despondent that they would have just put her off to the side forever. When we look through the stories of great Bible heroes, Joseph was done wrong. They done him wrong. They put him in a pit. He was sold into slavery. He goes into Potiphar's house doing his job. He's doing really well. By our books, he's made the top. He'll never be any higher than that. He's the CEO in Potiphar's house, has the car and the phone, so to speak, and he's got it all. I mean, Joseph should have been happy and was, it appears, and man, that's all we'd ever heard of him. And then comes in this wicked little Jezebel, Potiphar's wife, and she comes in, and if you remember the story, she tries to get him to do something very wrong with him, and then accuses him of rape. And he gets thrown in jail. Innocent until proven guilty, and in that kind of thing, nothing's changed. Or I'm sorry, guilty until proven innocent. And he goes to jail for 10 long years. And yet Joseph comes out of that with an amazing attitude. How do you respond when you're done wrong? If you react to it, you'll be wrong. You see, a reaction is just simply that, a reaction. You go into the doctor, and how many of you ever tried to make your own knee react? Anybody done that besides me? Some of you just don't want to admit it, do you? And you know, just imagine though, you go into the doctor, he hits you with that hammer and all that. That's reaction. That's all it is. And I wonder if in our lives, our churches, both publicly and privately, if most of our decisions are not reactions. We tend to call them then mistakes, don't we? But a response is something that takes some time. You see, a response is something that you have to study about, you have to pray about, you have to find a Bible verse about. I have always, in any counseling with anyone, always told them, when you have a problem, first of all, where's your verse? Find a verse that's going to get you through that trial or through that temptation. And then memorize it, quote it, learn it, study it, live it, and hang on to it. Because that is going to help you respond to it throughout it. You know, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for orphans. I just have always had, just have. My mother and father, when I was young, if you may remember, Harold Seitler, when he was alive, had the orphanage there in South Carolina, Greenville. We were through Greenville this week, and it reminded me of that. I was telling my wife that I remember a young man by the name of Dean. I don't know where he is today, but they used to have a program where you would adopt one of the orphans, so to speak, and we would send them a Christmas present and a birthday present and try to keep up what size clothes they needed, and we'd try to mail them clothes, and they'd send back pictures and letters. One time I remember they were singing, the children's home was singing somewhere near our home, and we got to go over there, and I remember it was great because Mom and Dad always took me, and I encourage parents to do this, teach your children how to serve. You know, we take our daughter, and sometimes we kind of daughter nap some of yours, and we take them, with permission, of course, over to the nursing home, and we have them sing and do things. And I want them to learn how to serve early on. They're not going to wake up one day and decide to serve in church unless you teach them. But I remember they took us over there every year. I would go Christmas shopping for Dean. We'd go birthday shopping for Dean. And they would try to spend an amount of money at Christmas every year just like he was their own child. And so I guess that's why maybe I grew up with a soft spot for that. But I remember that was one of the greatest things for me was being, I'll never forget that, being able to meet Dean. I was actually able to meet him and talk with him, and we got to play together and eat lunch together that day. I just remembered it, and I kind of wonder where in the world Dean is. I don't know. Never heard from him since then, because that's been many, many years. But you know, as she is an orphan here, she didn't have that. She's thrown into this. She's been done wrong. And you may be here this morning, and your childhood stunk. It was awful. I have talked with folks, and I know, and I remember one time had a young man in our academy came in, and every time there was a fight, it was him and. You know what I mean? Sometimes you'd have several kids get in, and little boys are going to get into fights, you know. Girls are too, but that's just different, you know. It's not quite the same. They talk about it and have, you know, the whole gang gets involved in it for a while, you know. But boys are different. They'll just go ahead and start duking it out right there, right then, especially in grade school and all that. Junior high. Now, when it hits junior high, sometimes it flip-flops, you know. The girls start beating one another up, you know. But I remember calling this young man in, and it was him again. Having to call his mom and dad in. I mean, it was getting out of hand. And I said, you know what? Or not his mom and dad, rather, his aunt. And I remember calling them in, talking with them. And I'll never forget. And the reason I said that wrong, mom and dad, because his mom, he didn't know where she was. His dad had died after leaving him and traveling with the circus and getting killed in the circus, literally. That's not a joke. It's true. And he had no upbringing with them. What he did remember from them was bad. And when I was talking with him, and he just had a horrible attitude, always fighting, always in trouble, mad at the world. And that's one of the things he said. Nobody cares. Nobody loves me. And I remember sharing this verse with him. I am proud to say that I know today this young man's married and has a family and all of that. But I remember sharing with him this verse. And I said, look, and I called his name. And I remember sharing with him in the book of Psalms, it says, when my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. And if you're here this morning and your mom or your dad forsook you, treated you bad, you were abused, I'm sorry. I can't change it. That's all I can do is tell you that I'm sorry. But I can tell you that the Lord will take you up. God will be your heavenly Father. God will wrap His arms around you when no one else will. He will take care of you. But I will tell you this. You can't stay there. You can't live there. You have to go on. You have to look forward. The book of, and I'm trying to place the reference in my head. It says, taking off those things which are behind us and putting on and pressing for the mark. Laying aside the sin that thus so easily beset us. You got to do that. You can't stay with that baggage all of your life. You keep carrying that baggage. You know what it's going to do? It's going to snowball. It's going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And the longer you drag that sack behind you, the more is going to get on it until you can't carry it anymore. So leave it at the cross. It's the only place it's going to stay. What is it that you thought about, though? They done me wrong. What came to your mind? Here she is, and I want you to see the charm. Esther charmed the eunuch, the keeper of the king's harem, just naturally. It says they loved her more than the rest. She gets the penthouse of the place. She's on the very top. He gives her the very best. And God blesses her attitude. And you say, well, what's her testimony? You know that we find you could write down all of Esther's words in about a little paragraph in the book of Esther. Even though the book bears her name, she very rarely ever speaks. But her life speaks volumes. And we find as she goes into this, we find that she is gracing everywhere she goes with her presence. Her name, Hadassah, meant myrtle, which is bore a flower shaped like a star. Esther means star. And so there she is, the star of the show. How would you have responded, though? You know, and there's something that I believe is wrong today in our society. You know, we joke a lot about women and men, and, you know, when you're early on, the boys start teasing the girls start teasing the boys, you know, anything you can do, I can do better, and all that. We all tease around with that. But the truth is, God made men, and He made women. And He made each of them to fulfill their special roles in a home relationship. You know, we joke a lot about it. In fact, I remember, you know, always in our country it was different. Years ago, women were not allowed to vote, you understand, in our country. There were different things. In fact, I used to have a law book that was, it was funny laws that are still on the law books that were never taken off. One of them was in the city of Miami, there is a law forbidding a person to chain their alligator to a light pole. So the next time you're in Miami, if you would please refrain from doing so, you might get a ticket. And there's other strange and crazy laws like that. In fact, in the state of Georgia, and this comes back from the days when you had to be ready for attacks from the Indians and Revolutionary War and all that business, I guess. But one of the laws that's still on the book in the state of Georgia is that every person, it's against the law not to bring your rifle fully loaded to church with you. Now, that's a church for rednecks, ain't it? I mean, I've seen some come to business meetings that way, but really. And I mean, some crazy laws. And here was one that I thought about, went back to the days before women's rights. It was, you know, used to, women were not allowed to drive automobiles in a lot of places. And there used to be a law. And now, if any of you men, you laugh at this too much, your wife's going to slap you. See, that's why I'm telling it from up here, where she can't get to me yet. If there's a flying hymn book, I will duck. But in the state of Tennessee, there is still a law on the books that says if a lady is driving a car, a man must run 100 yards ahead with a red flag waving to warn the residents. Now, I understand. understand, it had to do with the days when the cars were like, you know, horse and buggies. And there is, in its defense, of one that says if you're going to drive a car through certain towns, you had to go send a flagman ahead to warn the horsemen so they could restrain the horses when the car came through. But now, the truth is, women are made in the sight of God at the foot of the cross equal. The cross is equal. The book of Galatians says all before God are equal. Now, our society has got a particular group running around claiming that verse means it's okay to live whatever sexual lifestyle you want. That's not what it says. It says at the cross that men and women are equal. But you know, women are to be treated with respect. And if I could, and I don't think I'll make anybody mad with it, could I have all the ladies please stand up? All the girls and ladies, just stand up. All over the building, those that can. Do you realize, men, and I don't give you boys especially a little lesson here, they don't like you to be tough and mean to them. They would much rather you open the door for them and bring them flowers. Isn't that right? Treat them with respect. Our society has downgraded women, and they have told us that in the trying to be equal, that then we must put ladies down. And that's not true. Now, thank you, and y'all just be seated. Give them a hand, man. Now, I know it's not Mother's Day or anything like that. The boys, men, just remember sometime, open the door for a lady. They might be surprised and trip and fall down. You never know. I kid you not. I was on a state university one time taking a class, and I opened the girl for a door. How about that? That's pretty interesting. Here, have this door. I opened the door for a girl, and she got mad at me. I thought, well, next time, honey, I'm just going to slam it in your face. How do you like that, huh? I was just trying to be polite. I was brought up that you said yes, sir, and no, sir, and you said yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and you opened the door for a lady. That's just the way I was brought up. Nothing wrong with that. Ladies need to be treated with respect. But you know what? Even today, many ladies and girls have been done wrong. So have many boys and men. How do you respond to that? Now, with that crowd that was standing before you just a moment ago, I want you to think about this. Take away every single one of them that is married or widowed, has ever been married. Take all those away and just imagine the king's men would have been taking all of these beautiful young ladies out to go live with the king. That's where Esther was. They done me wrong. She responds, however, and let me give you a couple of quick hints. Number one, you respond in prayer for the wrongdoer. Pray for those which spitefully use you. Blessed are they which are you when they persecute you. The Bible says in the book of Romans in chapter 12, it says, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." Number one, you pray. Number two, you don't seek revenge. You know what? We have this attitude. Oh, I'll forgive. I'm not going to hold a grudge. I'm just going to get even. I'll forgive you, but I'm not going to forget it. Number three, you forgive as he forgave you. Have you ever tried to be mad at somebody you're praying for? That's hard, isn't it? And I mean praying in the right spirit. Don't be praying, God, you know how wrong they are, strike them dead. Really praying for them. You see, the Bible says to forgive even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. How's he forgiven you? Wow. But you don't know what they've done. Yeah? Really? You don't know what they've done. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He cried on the cross. You see, when we don't forgive, it does not hurt them. It hurts us. When you hold that grudge, when they've done you wrong, and you say, I'm not forgiving them, they've done me wrong, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life hating them. It's only going to hurt you. One of the kids' songs, and we sang a lot of the old songs this morning, and I like the old ones, I like the new ones. There's a newer song that's out that talks about bring it to the cross. I love that song. I can't remember the lyrics of it, and you sure don't want me to try to sing it, but I think the kids did it for Vacation Bible School a couple years ago. The teens did. They done me wrong. Now, how are you going to respond? There are people here, no doubt, this morning that have been carrying something in here for years. You were done wrong, and I'm sorry. Humans are sometimes despicable and disgusting and devious. We can't change that. But we can change our response. And let God take that bitterness and that hate and that malice towards that person, and He can wash it away through His grace. And that's the only way that you can respond in a biblical manner. I'm going to close with this story. I'll never forget when we used to play down. My wife has coached volleyball for a lot of years now, and she's not old enough to have coached as long as she's coached, I don't think. I'm trying to help you out here, babe. I think she's almost coached, what, 15, 16 years, something like that. But remember, we used to go down and play the Hope Children's Home in Tampa, Florida. And it's a great children's home. They have a great ministry there. It's been going on many years. And it's an orphanage. All the children there, many of them have parents, but they don't want them. Some of them come from homes where it's difficult and they took them there. But for the most part, they are not a reform school. They are simply an orphanage where some of them know who their mommy and daddy is and everything, but they don't want them. And so they are dropped off basically at this home whenever they have an opening. There's a waiting list usually to get into the home. It's all faith-based. They don't charge the parents anything. And beautiful campus. But we used to go, they had a sports team, and many times I've had some good teams over the years. And I always used to tell the kids, I don't care what these kids do to you, you better not get a technical, you better not do anything out of the way, because I coach basketball, and said, when I'm playing them, you better not get a technical. And Wendy'd always tell the girls, you better be on your best behavior when we play Hope. So I said, you don't know what kind of things these kids have been through. Don't you go in there and make fun of them. I better not hear of any of you doing that. And they usually would. The kids always responded well. And there were occasions. They had some pretty rough attitude kids on their teams. But I remember there was these two young ladies. They would play, both of them, they were sisters, and they played volleyball. One of them, I knew more than the other one. The other one grew up a little bit later, and we got to know her. Both of them always had a sweet smile on their face. I believe, if I remember right, they were from the Colombian country, from Colombia. They've been brought to the United States and made citizens here and all of that, and been taken into the children's home. Both of them were missing their right arms. They had prosthetics. Both of them loved sports, and both of them were good. They were able to play basketball, volleyball. I mean, I've never seen the light. This young girl, she would throw that volleyball up with one hand and spike it, just or serve it, rather, beautiful overhand serve. And I mean, she was able to get it together and bump and everything. And they played basketball, did all the sports. And I mean, you really couldn't play them any special because they'd beat you if you did. I mean, they played just like everybody else. But what I remember most was their attitude. They were always coming over. Some of our girls would go, have become friends with them, and they would talk with them back and forth, and every time they'd see each other. It was kind of unusual. Before the game, they're over giving one another hugs. And after the game. But come to find out, we begin to talk with the folks there. I knew a number of them that were in the home. These two young ladies, in their little lives, their drug cartel, for some reason, their father had made the drug cartel mad. They took that mom and dad, they took the two young ladies in front of their mom and dad and cut their right arms off. And then they killed the mom and dad in front of the children's eyes. They were done wrong. And yet those two young ladies had come to know Jesus Christ there through the orphanage, and you would never know that they had ever had a problem in their life. Sweet as they could be. Because they responded when they were done wrong.